Welcome to the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If your job involves working with or influencing people's behavior, this podcast offers invaluable insights into what makes people tick. Through personal interviews that are thoughtful and surprising, we explore the full range of the roots to people smarts that can help you make or break your own career. My name is Marie Gervais, and with a PhD in culture and learning in the workplace and my own cultural journey, I bring the mysteries of human beings at work around the world to you. Through conversations with very diverse people, examining the groups they were born into and the ones they chose to belong to, my podcast takes a deep dive into why people do what they do and how they belong. Hone your skills to manage others and to be a better human being at work with the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections podcast listeners. Today, I have a most wonderful guest for you. Her name is Marnie Batista. She is an entrepreneur, author, transformational life design specialist, podcast host, dear to my heart, and a radical truth seeker. Honest, relatable, and down-to-earth podcasting and writing drop pearls of wisdom that not only inspire laughter and insights, but share radical, life-changing stories of triumph and love. She is on a mission. The mission is to help women harness the courage to stop letting life live them and start living a life that's beyond their wildest dreams. Marnie Batista and her work have appeared in many impressive places, such as the LA Times, The New Yorker, The Dr. Phil Show, On Air with Ryan Seacrest, and Home and Family TV. Her new book, Your Radical Living Challenge, 7 Questions for a Meaningful Life, is coming out in early 2025 from Hay House Publishing. Welcome, Marnie.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear your answers to my questions and to find the many pearls of wisdom.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit about what you do now and what you're known for, but let's go back a little bit and give a more personal story. You must have been born somewhere. You have a family. You come from someplace. So tell us a little bit of background.
Oh, I love that. Well, I was born in Iowa and I really felt like my whole life, like I didn't exactly belong. And I think that when I looked at like rewriting that story over the journey of the last few years, whereby I no longer sort of got the short end of the stick in life. And I really looked at like how that was actually like this giant blessing. Everything really opened up for me in terms of allowing myself to finally feel like very free from the story of who I was and how my childhood impacted me. And I think that's an important thing to do when you get especially into your 50s and late 50s.
Oh, yeah. You can't live your whole life in the shadow of your past thinking you have been only victimized and you didn't learn anything from it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I did that. I was married for 17 years, husband number one. We have amazing 3 daughters who are now in their 20s and doing fantastical. They were my original why for figuring my life out. I was unhappy in that marriage, even though on the outside, it looked really super awesome, hunky-dory. I came from a family where there was no divorce. It was terrifying to say to the world and to even myself, good enough isn't great. And this isn't what I really want. So when I was sort of going through that and I felt like I wasn't sure if I'd made the right decision, I had started dating someone else. He ended up to be another version of my ex-husband, just sort of better looking. I really was like, okay, I have to figure this out because I have 3 daughters and I'm not going to pass this on. Like, this isn't the legacy I'm going to leave for them. So they really became my why. And at the time they were 2 years old and 12 years old and 8 years old. So, you know, they were little. And that was really my core motivation to figure out what it was that was stopping me from really being who I was in the world. And then that journey has never stopped.
Good. We should always be on a continuous learning journey.
Yeah, for sure.
What about career-wise? What did you do before you were doing podcasting and being an entrepreneur?
Well, I don't know about you, but back when I grew up in the 70s and 80s, I told my dad I wanted to be a teacher. And I used to sit on the little staircase at my family home in Iowa, and I would line up all my stuffed animals, my dolls, and I would play teacher. And my dad was like, you don't want to do that. You're never going to make any money. Don't be a teacher. And I heard him and I listened and I went to college and I was like a political science major or some sort of random thing. I thought I wanted to be a news reporter. I went and worked in Washington, D.C. for like 5 minutes and I was like, no. This is not what I want to do. It was during the time that President Reagan was shot. I was just like going on all these stakeouts, just sitting in cold weather, waiting for people to walk in and out of buildings. And I was like, I think this is not my calling. And I ended up going in my 20s, actually. And I worked for a not-for-profit organization that was associated with the National Association of Realtors. And I started doing marketing. And I left that job and I started my own consulting business, helping trade associations create marketing materials.
Good niche.
Was so niche.
Yeah.
So I was living in Chicago at the time. After DC, Chicago is the second largest headquarters for trade associations.
Hmm.
Who knew?
Yeah.
So I did that and I was married and I was doing my married thing. And my husband at the time got a job in Los Angeles. We moved to Los Angeles. I closed down my business and started to become a mom. And when I got divorced, I was like, I'm going to be a teacher. Here I go. So I went back to school. I got my master's degree and I got a job that paid really horribly teaching kindergarten, which I loved. But when that job came to an end, for a lot of reasons, I realized that that ending was like the best thing that happened to me because I had an idea to write a book about dating. Because now by this time I was divorced and I'd been single and I had a really great girlfriend and we were laughing all the time about how horrible dating was. We were comparing stories and we had this idea, let's write a book about it. So we came up with this idea and we got an agent and we couldn't sell the book. And the agent was like, this is such a great idea, but like, you don't have a platform. And I said, what's a platform? Is that a shoe? Like, I don't really know. Yes, you know?
Yeah, that was a thing.
Yes. Yeah. And in the meantime, I had gone on this personal development journey and I was in my kitchen. I'll never forget the moment. I was volunteering, doing some personal development. And I was talking to someone after it was over. And I was like, you know, I was thinking of writing this book. And I was thinking maybe about being a coach. And the guy's like, you were thinking about being a coach. What do you mean you are a coach? Look at this group that you facilitate. Look how many people come every month. You are a coach. I was like, ding. It like light bulbs went off. I was like, this is what I meant to do. I meant to help people. I meant to write this book. At first, my business was only focused on dating, but that was really the trajectory that it started. That was in 2008, I went to school to be a coach for almost a year. I then ended up meeting my now husband and started my business that has evolved over the last 15 years into what it is today. So that's my story. I've never told it linearly like that. So thank you.
Well, it's a great story. And it also shows how important it is for other people to mirror what they see in us, because you can state it out loud and still not know you've got it or that you're doing it until someone says, but you already are.
Yeah, exactly. And I see that a lot. You know, people are like, before I do this thing, this dream that I have, I need to do 747 things first, which, by the way, is super overwhelming. So most of them don't even do the first step, right? And then they just stay in what I call this backup life, just kind of like waiting mm-hmm. for time to pass. Mm-hmm. And so I feel really grateful that I had had that early experience of having a business, even though it was completely unrelated. I felt like, wow, okay, I get how this could work. And then I just knew that I needed to hire the right people to help me set it up and figure it out. And so that was super helpful.
Yeah. They say that it's between 2 and 3 times before your business starts to work. But that previous experience that you had was necessary for you to build a sustainable business at the time you do.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think that iteration is a really important thing. I was just talking to a client of mine who started a business 3 or 4 years ago, and she's come so far in the time that we've worked together, really nailing her messaging and her sales and all that. And it's coming to the end of the year. We need to like do an assess and adjust, and we need to refine and polish and iterate, basically. And she was like, no, when am I going to get it? And I was like, no. Here's the big limiting belief. There is no it. There is no like magical moment when you see the unicorn, you know, fireworks go off and you're like, I have my business, or I never have to change anything again. No. Set it and forget it is a lie.
That will never happen. And it's more cumulative. I think I noticed this a number of years ago, halfway into my business, which I've been doing for 17 years. So halfway in, somebody said in one of those, you know, form letter emails that you get, it's not that you have this moment when you arrive. It's more like you cumulatively start to figure things out and you realize you have less stresses in the areas that were bogging you down before. And all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, some of this is now working. And then more of it starts to work. But you have to keep making those changes as you go along. And that's when I stopped beating myself up about not having a magic bullet moment.
Yeah, right. Because first of all, even if you did, the way that our world is moving so quickly, that magic bullet will be like out of date, you know,
yeah, it'll,
you know,
minutes.
There'll be a magic bullet. And also we're evolving.
Yes.
That's really why I ended up shifting so many things in my life. My business was because the business that I created 15 years ago isn't the me now. And that's not what I care about. And also I've got the wisdom and the experience of what I've done so far. By the way, I didn't even tell you like in my story, like I went to grad school before I went to school to be a teacher. I went to grad school when I was married for the first time. Early on in that marriage to become a registered dietitian.
Ah.
Right. I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to help people because I just overcome like an eating disorder. And I really cared about educating people and helping people. And that training was amazing. But I quickly learned once I got in the field, I was like, no, this is not what I do. But it all stacks up. I feel like we're all on a scavenger hunt, but we don't know where it's going to lead. But there's a promise that if we have faith, we just keep following the breadcrumbs and, you know, breaking through the barriers that are there. We get there. We're like, oh, I could never have imagined this.
Yeah. You get through the dark forest and you go, hey, I did it. And then you see the mountain in front of you. You have to start climbing that one. But yeah. So tell me from the groups that you were born into, because people are born into different groups. It can be the region. It can be the state, as you mentioned. It can be race, culture, religion, language, social class. It can be so many different things. You didn't have a choice. You were born into those groups. What would you say now, reflecting back, has most influenced you now?
Wow. I love this question. So I did this exercise. I did it myself. I taught it to my clients. It's like life mapping. And the essential pieces of it are that you look at your life from the beginning and you write down these pivotal moments and the decisions that you make. And you kind of review those and you ask this question and you look back and you go, you know, which parts of me did I mute? Did I discard? Did I not pay attention to so that I could go make this other decision or this thing happened to me and I had to be resilient and carry on. And all of that pointed to the final sort of component, which was what's your through line? Like what's your 2 minute or 1 minute story of you? I was like, what could that, like, what is that? And I realized that it was really clear to me once I kind of took the blinders off and started to really get into not what I thought it should be, but who I really am. And it was like, it's a story about a girl on a quest for adventure who reinvents herself again and again to finally live life on her own terms where she gets to be all of who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say like, what are the significant moments? If I go back in my life, I constantly was craving new and novel experiences. So set the scene. I'm in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. There's like maybe 100,000 people that live there. I am from a Jewish family. There's like maybe 40 Jewish families. I used to say we were Cedar Rapids rich, which is, you know, in a small town. But my dad worked in international business and he always had these people coming from all over the globe to this small town in Iowa. And so when I was 10 years old, my parents said, we know this person who's doing this French-American snow class, and you can do it if you want. You're going to take French lessons with this group of like five kids in Cedar Rapids for like 6 months. And then you're going to go spend a month living in France, learning how to ski.
Mm, wow.
And I was like, okay. Now that I think back of it, I look at 10-year-olds that I know now or even my own kids. Like, first of all, it was insane that my parents were like, go do that, right?
Go do that for a month when you're 10.
Yeah, when I was 10.
With some strange group in another country.
And my parents knew the person who created the organization. And this was like the Cedar Rapids like cohort or whatever. And I went with a friend and I met these kids and I learned French and we had had these like au pairs. And so we stayed at the home of the family that our au pair had come from for a week. And then we went to this like really remote area of France near the Swiss Alps. And I went to this class. We went and took school in the morning and we skied in the afternoon. And I made a bet with my dad, like, I think I'm going to be able to talk to you in French because my dad had spoke a little French. when I come back. And I will never forget. I came home, we spoke French, and I won the bet. But I think that that first experience was like, wow, I can do hard things. I want to do hard things. Like, I want to explore new and novel opportunities. And so I really have always taken on, even though it was terrifying, I've just had this inside of me, this like desire to go on an adventure, to go on a quest.
That's a lovely, lovely experience and a lovely way of reflecting back on it. I had a similar experience when I was 12, but it was more like it was so horrible to be in the place that I was in that my parents were worried I was going to turn into a depressed teenager. So they sent me to Germany for a year.
Oh, wow.
Which was where my father's family was from, but I spoke not a single word of German. And so I came back speaking German as fluently as you can for a 12-year-old in a 12-year-old lens experience. But I remember how frustrating it was to actually switch back into English when I came back. And my dad was so proud of me. He was like shining with pride that I'd learned to converse in German. And I came back so confident. You know, I wasn't confident when I left. I came back so confident. I imagine, whether you knew it or not, what you were going into when you came back, you were surrounded with things that allowed you to take that adventure and come back confident, not defeated, right?
Yeah, I mean, I had to overcome a lot of little hurdles, right? Like not knowing the language and also learning how to ski. I mean, I'd gone skiing like once or twice in Iowa, which was not quite the Swiss Alps. So that was cool. Yeah, right? So that was really cool. And yeah, I was confident. I think then life happens and kind of, you know, as I got older and some of that confidence like melted away. But it's a really beautiful experience and memory of really feeling like I'm in my element. I felt so fulfilled and excited for having done the journey and proud of myself.
Oh, yeah. We had a similar experience, I think. So what about being Jewish in Iowa? How did that affect you over the long term?
Well, here's the funny thing. I didn't really know. I don't have any grim story of anti-Semitism or anything like that.
It may be just a feeling of belonging, you know?
Well, no, what's interesting about it is that, you know, I grew up in a little bubble, basically, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part. And so my parents were really involved in our synagogue. I was just telling someone the story that my parents were really, really good friends with the rabbi and his wife. And my mom was like the open door, like, come tell me your woes. And they didn't have very many places they could share their struggles and hardships because, you know, they were like the leaders of the small community. And so I just have all these great memories of their friendship with my parents. The one thing that happened, though, was, and I will never forget this, was the Jewish high holidays are always in the fall, which is when many high schools have homecoming. And my high school organized the homecoming dance and event. It was on the Jewish high holidays. And my mom was like, I'm calling the school board. And I was like, no, you're not. I'm like, no, you're not. There's literally like a total of 5 people in the high school that are Jewish. And what's crazy is then I ended up living in Los Angeles where schools are closed for Jewish holidays. You know, like it's a different orientation. But I do remember being like, don't make a thing. Like,
yeah, don't make me stand out and look even more different than I already feel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so what's crazy about it is I've always had that really like loving, warm connection of that community of having a synagogue or temple experience that was like homey and warm. And I think that I was always looking for that. And living in LA, it was much harder to do. But now where I live in this small town in Colorado, there's this little Jewish community. And my husband and I, you know, jumped in and got involved right away. And every time I go, I'm like, wow, I really feel at home like I did when I was a kid, where I'm like, these are my people and it's small and everybody knows each other and everyone's like looking out for each other and everyone cares. It's very difficult to have that when there's like, you know, 5,000 members of a synagogue or a religious organization in a major metropolitan area. So I feel much joy at having come to this place that feels like home.
That's lovely. This feeling of being surrounded by a community that supports you and is loving is really, I think, essential to building resilience, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. And when I was younger, I didn't know what that was.
No.
Right?
No. It's only reflecting back.
Yeah, it's reflecting back. I think that when I went on this radical living adventure over the last like 5 years or so, and I was telling my kids that, you know, I lived in Iowa, this small town, like my whole life, I was like, I'm leaving the minute I turn 18 and I'm never coming back, right? To live in Chicago, to live in Los Angeles, and then feel like what I really want in this next chapter of my life is to be back in a small town. If you would have said, are you ever going to live in a small town? I would have been like, hell no.
Yeah. That's why we should never say never, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so I think having community, and I wanted to be around like-minded people for that exact reason, like to be buoyed up and supported and have like-minded people to feel like that are on the same mission with the same values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's lovely. And it's also a nice model to keep throughout your life. To seek it, to create it, to build it around you in the situations that you're in. So what about as you grew up, you chose to belong to different groups, different communities. What's influenced you from those new associations?
So love this. So when I decided to do this life design process the first time for myself, I had this idea that I wanted to get a master's in fine arts, basically a master's degree in writing. I've always wanted to write, and I've been writing something since a very young age. And I started doing some conversations with other people around, like other colleagues, mentors, writers, authors, you know, is this a good move for me? And I was told, like, for me, where I was in my life, create your own MFA. I was like, what does that mean? You know, like, what could that mean for me? And what it meant was that I really got clear on what are the things that you learn in that kind of a writing program and how could I create it myself through individuals, courses, topics, consultants, whatever it is. And so I really created a community of being a writer and surrounding myself with other writers and getting into writing communities and talking about writing and being in a book club that isn't just some women. And if you do this, it's fine. Mine isn't like that, but it wasn't just like sit around, talk to the book for 10 minutes. We have like a facilitator who's a professor and we talk about structure and character. And I learned about publishing and I learned about craft and I took a 1-year writing program. So just like that to be in order to really instill the identity author, I wanted to be in the writing community. I wanted to learn what does it look like to be a literary citizen. And so that those are the communities that have made the biggest impact on me in the last 5 years and one which I'm really pursuing for myself and will continue to do that.
I love that. It's a really beautiful answer to that question that you sought to be a part of a community, to create a community around you, to do the things that would give you that same feeling you had in the small town synagogue, but sort of next step up so that you could be part of the literary community and learn and be nurtured together from that group into this new craft, right?
Yeah, and it's so fun. I was in a group in 2019. Yeah, because I started in 2019 of people who were writing, trying to write a novel or some big piece of work. And the most fun, here it is, like 4 years later, and I go on Facebook and some of those people that I met there, they're like publishing their books and they're speaking. And it's like very fun to see people in the journey and
stay with it.
Right. Because, you know, unless you're doing like write a book in 90 days for your business to write like a different kind of book, it takes a while. And so it's been really fulfilling. And then I went to a writer's conference in the town I live in now, which is so beautiful that it even has a writing community. And I was like, 2025, they have live meetings twice a month and they brought in speakers. And I was like, it felt like, oh, here I am. I'm home. I found my people here too. So not just online.
You're a fish. You found the right pool.
I did. There's so many pools in this town. And I'm like, I can't swim in all of them at the one time. So I've just been like, swimming laps. And now I feel like, oh, I'm ready to go swim laps in another pool.
That's great. So let me ask you about temperament and personality. People are born with some kind of a temperament and then it's nurtured or discouraged as they grow up. But personality you add on to depending on your opportunities and how you take advantage of them, the obstacles you overcome or don't overcome, and you develop your personality continuously through that. So what would you say has been temperament and plus that includes nature and nurture and also personality for you? What have you added on for personality and what did you come into the world with?
I came into the world with a deep need to tell stories and to understand stories.
Mm.
My dad was a storyteller. He told the best stories. Ironically, though, he said the best thing to do to really make a connection with someone is to ask them a lot of questions, be genuinely curious about them and listen. And he said, the one problem is they won't ever ask about you, but that's okay. You're going to like really get to know who they are. And you're from that place, you're going to create this great connection. And so I think I just had that innate thing to like be curious, to listen to what I hear and then put it together and connect the dots and create the story or an understanding. And I used that when I was in that marketing business in my early 20s. I learned that in dating, you know, like how to create a connection and understand people. And then as a coach, it ended up really being my superpower. Not only because I can really get people and coach them and connect the dots, I love to tell stories. And so the opportunities I get when I get to teach, and if you're really paying attention, I did ultimately become a teacher. I just make more money than a teacher who teaches in elementary school.
I was paying attention. I certainly took note of that.
Yeah, right. I was like, I did get my teaching degree so I can create awesome curriculum, legit. And also I do it a way now that I'm not in a classroom of the traditional sense, but I love to get up in front of people, whether I'm sitting on Zoom or going to a workshop or whatever it is, and teach through story. I love doing videos. I love doing interviews like this. It's just like who I am. And then my personality, I think, how did that get formed? I mean, I just think that I became more of who I have always innately been. I just don't think I knew it. And I got myself in experiences that allowed me to be more of who I am. So I think my personality is like always evolving.
Yeah, it should be. And also you mentioned earlier being adventuresome and being willing for the next adventure. So being adventuresome and then able to tell a good story about it because of all the people you met and listened to. That's great. So many people don't know how to tell a story, even on a basic level, don't you think?
I mean, yeah, for sure. I've read a lot of interesting things and listened to a lot of things without a story. But the thing is, and actually I was helping one of my dear friends, her daughter's applying to grad school, and there's nothing more fulfilling than being asked, can you help me with my grad school applications? And so she did her first draft and they're very well done, right? But I was like, the story's missing.
Where's
like,
the story? Missing. Where are you?
I'm like, let's open it with, you have a tumor. Those are going to be the first. She's like, oh my God, those are words I didn't expect to hear at 30 years old. That's much more than like upon receiving a diagnosis, right? Like, and so yeah, put yourself in the story. Like people want to connect. And the crazy thing, and I think Brené Brown says this so well, like nobody wants to be vulnerable, but we love it when we hear a vulnerable story because we're like, oh my God, me too, right? Mm-hmm. So even though it's scary, like share your story, be vulnerable because it really helps people to connect because then they know they're not the only one with that flavor of crazy.
Yeah. What's your flavor of crazy? So can you recall a time when you became aware that what you thought of as normal was specific to your culture and not indeed the norm? You already mentioned one, which would be being Jewish in a small community. And then your mom says, I'm going to call the school board. And you go, wait a minute, no, they won't even get it. So that's one. But when else did you experience a moment of cultural dissonance or surprise?
Oh my gosh, these questions are so fun. So back when I was a young mom, I was involved in the school PTA and it was a private school. So I felt like it was fancy. And I was on a committee with this woman and she was fully quirky. Looking back on it, probably on the spectrum, 25 years ago, that wasn't as common.
There was no diagnosis. Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't talk about anyone being neurodiverse or any of those things. So she was quirky, right? She didn't make friends easily. I worked with her. Of course, I was on the library committee because it had to do with books. And I got to know her really well. And she was quirky, but like she was really smart and interesting. And we created this great relationship. And the time came for the annual meeting or whatever to put people on the heads of committees for the following year. And I had recommended that my friend be the chair. Like I felt like she could graduate. And I was like being talked about to be the president of the PTA. And I was told in a side conversation, you know, we don't like that person. She's weird. We don't really want her around. We don't even definitely don't want her in any leadership position. So if you're going to kind of be friends with her, it's not going to work. You can't lead this thing and then like want her to be in the leadership. And I was like, what the hell? Mm-hmm. Seriously? I was like, seriously? And I left the group. I was like, I don't want to be part of this group. That's insane. It's freaking school, like elementary school. And so I felt like really dissonant. I was like, what do I do? These are supposed to be my friends. Like I was becoming quote unquote popular. You know, it's like high school all over again. I'm going to be cast out. What's the moral dilemma? And there was just no way in hell I was going to abandon this person. And it was really interesting because I did have to set boundaries. I had to do a lot of things that were hard to be her friend, but I couldn't do it any other way. And so I just really, at that moment, was like, wow, these really aren't my people. Even though I've spent the last, you know, 10 years creating a community here, this isn't my vibe. And so I had to really figure out where else can I find community in this town? And it was hard because I was on the out. So I had to find other ways and other places to find my people.
You made a values decision, I think.
Yeah.
And you thought, even though there may be some difficulties, it doesn't mean that we should exclude and ostracize people who are not exactly that fitting into some mold. So I think that was a very courageous thing that you did, because based on what you've already said, it sounds to me like courage is one of those parts of your personality.
I do definitely have some courage.
So what makes you feel the most comfortable to work with other people? What gives you what you need to be at your best?
Well, what's interesting is in my work, I do this thing called soul mapping. And so I really look at like, what do I love? And what are the conditions in which I thrive to do those things? And then what are my core motivations? So if I had that piece of paper in front of me, I'd reel off the whole list. But the core piece of it is I love things where there's connection. I love being around people who have integrity. I love being in a community and in a place where people are active and engaged. I love people who take responsibility and have agency for what it is that they're doing. I love being outdoors. I love playing. Love playing. I love to play. I don't care about winning. Although for my first time, I'm in a fantasy football league. There's no money, but I'm in the league. And literally last night, I was supposed to win against my matchup, and there's this app and it shows your percentage opportunity to win. And at first it was me 70, the other person 30, then it was 50-50. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then stuff started happening. It was like, you know, I was down to 30% chance to win, 20% chance to win. And I literally was like, wait a minute. I thought I'm the person who likes to play, but not win. I was texting my daughter's boyfriend. I joke he's my coach because I've never done this before. And I was like, I don't know. I mean, at what point do you give up? And he was like, we're not giving up. We could still be like, you know, 4-4 next week. And it was so funny. And you know what? Then I ended up winning. And I was like, I love this game.
Well, it doesn't matter if you win until you're not winning.
Exactly. Especially in fantasy football. So I'm going to write something about what I've learned about myself from fantasy football as a woman.
That is great. I mean, everyone's going to want to read that for sure.
I hope so.
So we're almost at the end of the interview, and this is your soapbox moment. What would you like to promote?
Well, here's the thing. I believe all these questions that you've asked me are so profound because they point to this mission that I have about like how we all have a version of a radical life inside of us where we get to really fully express all the parts of ourselves through challenge and growth. So the book that I've written that's coming out is how do you create your own radical living challenge so that you feel like you are living a life of meaning on your own terms. I think that what success means is varied and that we've fallen into this trap of living by the giant they, whoever they is, have told us of what a meaningful and successful life is. And I think what we know is that when we get there and we're not, we feel a lot of guilt and shame. So what I want to say is like, it's okay. I'm giving you permission to say like, I want more. I can be grateful for what I have. And also I feel like I'm incomplete, so that there's this pathway to actually figure out like, how do you create and reinvent yourself in your next chapter, whatever that is, whether you're 30, 40, 50, 60, or 70.
Or if you're in the middle of a global crisis.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Which is feels like every other day.
Yeah. Well, this is good. You do not want to point people to some particular program or book or something. You want people to buy your book when it comes out. What do you think?
I do. I would love for them. They could go to MarnieBatista.com. I have a quiz on there called decodeyourdestinyquiz.com. They can find out like where in the journey of living a radical life they are. They can learn about the 7 questions on there. They can buy the book, and it's available everywhere. Barnes and Noble, Walmart, Target, online, offline.
Awesome. I really want to go click on that and then check it out.
Great. I'm creating a movement of women who are ready to live on their own path. So be part of it.
I'm in.
Yay. I love that. Thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, just thank you for being so, this is such a fun, I love, and see, it was radical. This interview was radical. You asked me questions that no one else has asked me, and it was such a fun dialogue, and I feel like I grew from it. So thank you for the opportunity to allow me to express myself.
You're welcome. It's been mutually joyful. Thanks, Marnie. Have a great rest of the day.
You too.
Marnie Battista was a delightful guest to interview. Her enthusiasm for life, continuous search for making meaningful career decisions, and her capacity to apply courage and community to solve any problem are most inspiring. I loved how Marnie explained her life between small rural and large city environments and the way she sought out the safety and support of small communities wherever she went. From the tiny synagogue of her childhood to the writer's group of her adulthood, Marnie has been an expert at creating the ecosystem of support and growth that benefit not only her own projects and purpose, but that of those who participate with her in those groups. Here are some takeaways I had from this interview. 1, courage can be cultivated by parents. Marnie's parents thought that an au pair French learning with skiing in the Swiss Alps was the perfect adventure for a 10-year-old girl, and it was. 2, we can create our own systems of support. When we don't have what we need to move forward, we can bring a few people together and see what sticks as the community develops. And 3, life does not have to be lived according to the expectations of those around us. We can take charge of our own lives by reflecting on a map of past decisions and choosing to move forward. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, you will right away share it with someone you think would benefit from hearing it. Just share the link in the text and you are helping to spread the joy. While you're at it, check out our page, shiftworkplace.com/podcast, and leave a review or a donation to the cause of workplace happiness podcasting. Thank you so much for listening, and may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day.